Hey folks, this is Christian, bringing you another edition of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. Mapping a path forward to prosperity, building self-sufficient, resilient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. This is episode 16 of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. Today is Wednesday, October 4th, and we've got plenty of stuff to do. I'd like to start with an icebreaker, taking a quick look at Puerto Rico and the way that systems have broken down there, both the fact that the distribution systems and logistics in general have failed to reboot as one would hope that they would, and then also something that fewer people are talking about, that 100% of the agriculture on that island has been decimated. So we'll take a look at that. Then we'll dip into the daily steps that folks in the Ice Age Farmer community have been taking to move themselves and their families closer to self-sufficiency. After that, I'll be sharing with you a bit of the news that's related to the Grand Solar Minimum. We'll be dipping into a couple articles and then reviewing some of those that have been picked up by Grand Solar Minimum specific hashtags. We'll take a look at that, driven by Twitter today. After that, I'd like to talk a little bit about ham radio. I've got a viewer question about a few of them actually by now about communications and the way that we'll be able to stay in touch as things deteriorate and or if the electrical grid goes down. So I'd like to talk a bit about amateur or ham radio, as it's called. And also, I think it's relevant right now as a piece came across my desk mentioning that ham radio operators were actually being sought out and imported into Puerto Rico, where they were helping get to people who needed help right away. So they're saving lives actively there right now. And so too, I think, can a bit of training on that front, on the communications front, save lives in an uncertain future, any number of futures, as well as just working with radios is fun and a good skill to have. It makes you more valuable to your community. So we'll talk about that. And yes, I am a ham radio operator, obviously. That's why I like talking about it. And then we'll talk a bit more about the book of the day, and I'll round out the episode there. But before we do all that, I'm actually thrilled to let everyone know that Ice Age Farmer Patreon member supporters now get 10% off at theaquaponicssource.com, which carries the aquaponics fish food that I mentioned in last episode. I actually reached out to these guys and made sure that Ice Age Farmer members can get 10% off there, not just on the fish food, but they have a pretty deep store. There's everything down to composting worms and vertical towers, pumps, anything you can imagine for your aquaponics system, they've got in stock as well. I reached out to the Algae Research Supply Company, algaeresearchsupply.com. They've got spirulina cultures, nutrient mixes, and food for your spirulina. And kits, even, that you can sort of get everything pre-mixed and ready to go. And same thing, a 10% discount there, which is helpful because getting your spirulina culture started actually takes a little bit of capital up front. So I'm thrilled to be able to share that. That is true for patreon.com/iceagefarmer. Members, check it out, and I really appreciate your support. Thank you to my members, and thank you to all folks who are watching this, and even to folks who are just spreading the word, because that is, after all, the most important thing, is letting people know what's going on as the climate is changing and the food production systems are failing. It is up to the individual, because the state has certainly failed to position us to succeed as we enter this future. In fact, speaking of the state, let's go ahead and dip into Puerto Rico.
Now to Puerto Rico, where a humanitarian crisis continues to mount and the island's one economic bright spot before Hurricane Maria has been shredded, the storm devastating agriculture. Governor Ricardo Rossello flew to Puerto Rico's southern coastal town of Salinas. En route, they saw how rural areas were especially hard hit by the Category 4 storm. 80% of wooden homes were damaged or destroyed, and nearly 100% of the territory's ag sector sustained significant damage. And while most of the island's food is imported, statistics from the governor show about 7,000 people working in agriculture there. Farm income was growing, and crop production acreage is up 50% over the past 4 years.
80% of the island is still without telecoms, so it's very hard to keep executing that way. Adding to that, Puerto Rico's energy grid has completely been destroyed. Completely been destroyed. Nothing, you know, we had an old infrastructure that wasn't effective and that wasn't maintained. And then on top of that, the hurricane provokes the complete collapse.
Agriculture income is divided nearly equally between crop and livestock production, according to USDA data. Crop sales generate about $271 million a year, led by production of plantains, vegetables, and melons, nursery, and greenhouse crops. Livestock sales are about $276 million, led by milk production, poultry, and cattle. One of the hardest hit crops was coffee, and the timing could not have been worse. Bean harvest was about to ramp up. Trees were severely damaged. New trees take several years to mature enough to produce beans.
And before we leave Puerto Rico, let's hear about their supply chain logistics, how that's holding up.
Puerto Rico, supplies that people desperately need. They say that they're feeding their grandchildren crackers. They have no running water. They can't get to fuel. And now look at this. There are 3,000 cargo containers here at Crowley, one of the biggest shippers in Puerto Rico. These are all refrigerated units. They're known as reefers. And each one of them operates on a generator. Crowley is now using 4,000 gallons of fuel every single day to keep the operations here at its terminal up and running. But here's the problem. The truck drivers can't get to the terminal to get their containers out. Each one of these has medicine and food, construction supplies, building equipment, and all of that needs to get to Puerto Rico. At this point, though, when you're looking at truck drivers who can't be reached by their businesses by cell phone, they don't have the gas to get to work, and then even when they do get to work, their semi-trucks don't have fuel. The problem is the supply chain. Here's what the executive for Crowley told me about the problem.
The people of Puerto Rico are fighting hard, but there's no way we're going to be able to do this by ourselves. We need much more support from the federal agencies right now. We also ask the distributors and the trucking company that in a way that it is possible to please come and start moving the cargo here, because we need to make room in order to receive the cargo that is on its way.
I just wanted to give you an example of the grocery stores. 226 supermarkets around the island are ready to open, but they don't have diesel for their generators. At Crowley Terminal alone, there's the Supermercado Econo. It's one of the biggest supermarket chains on the island. It has 104 containers sitting here. V. Suarez, a big food distributor, has 114 containers. Walmart has 70 containers. They're all stuck. And when you're talking about lifting that Jones Act, the executives are saying, how is that going to help? It's not that we don't have the supplies. We have the fuel on the island that we need. We have the supplies. We don't have the distribution channels to get them from the terminal offsite. And oh, by the way, they're running out of room. Look around. There's no more room left to put containers here. It's all full. So the problem is, how do you get the supply chain back up and running? Diesel fuel seems to be one of the big missing links here, guys.
Yeah, Contessa, I mean, if you're able to get fuel there via shipment somehow, is the real bottleneck that, or is it the drivers? And if you get the drivers, are the roads passable to where they could get these goods where they need to go?
Hey, Carl, that's a great question. So first of all, here's what Crowley executives on the ground responsible for these logistics are telling me. They say the problem is not that there's no fuel. There's fuel. There's plenty to fuel the recovery on the island. The problem is distribution.
So a couple key points to take away from this is that Puerto Rico, which is in a range where they could be producing food, has just had their ag sector completely wiped out. There will be no food coming off that island. They'll be only importing food going forward until that is recovered. And then also just the way that the governor literally is saying, hey, we need help getting back on our feet. We run on these systems, and this is true around the world. We run on fragile, fickle systems, which will require help to get stood back up if they are knocked down by a severe solar storm or a series of storms here on Earth, like these hurricanes. Whatever it is that actually performs the knocking, we're going to have some trouble getting these systems up. And that's what we're seeing, even when it's a highly localized occurrence, like here in Puerto Rico. And so when you imagine that A, this kind of storm is going to be the norm, that we're going to have more of these, and that the same is true of seismic and volcanic activity, that these events are going to continue to happen around the world. And so these localized problems will continue to escalate and grow in number. And the amount of help that the world at large is able to offer any individual one will continue to decrease until perhaps we just see that the gradual load of this degradation takes down the entire system. This is the soft landing alternative to a massive solar flare, CME taking down the entire world at the same time. Neither scenario is terribly attractive. Both involve your power being taken away from you. And that's why we come back to those questions. How are you going to get your food if there is no food in the stores? How are you going to cook your food if you don't have power? How are you going to get your water if the tap has run dry or there's no power to run your well? Do you have contingencies in place? Are you willing right now to bet your life on the secondary systems that you have put in place for your family to continue to thrive if the primary, what we call now the primary systems upon which civilization itself is built and depends for our food, our water, and our physical security, if those are removed, how do you feel about that? And more to the point, how can you feel better about that tomorrow? What can you do today? What steps can we take? And with that, let's get to the Daily Steps section, where we answer exactly that question and find out what other people in the Ice Age farmer community are doing to bring themselves and their own families closer to food security, food sovereignty. Sean, number one, overcame a great deal of anxiety after the realization of the Grand Solar Minimum hitting and was able to go out and get some non-GMO seeds for the kids and start planting away this morning. Congrats on both getting to the point where you're actively taking steps forward and on involving your family on the moving forward. The second Sean is actively doing experiments now with DC voltage applied to seeds. I'm anxious to see how this electroculture experiment turns out. We also heard from James Coleman, who indeed lives in Canada, where, as we explored in last episode, it is now illegal to question the official global warming narrative. So James, you are a thought criminal for listening to this podcast. And he points out Galileo and Copernicus were thrown into jail for saying that the Earth revolved around the sun. And so too now, are we going to question the reality of what we're being told? Phi, who has an awesome name, has written letters, he points out, to the local papers, trying to get climate truth into them as opinion pieces. Awesome work spreading the gospel of the climate truth there, Phi. That is the kind of thing, the kind of outreach that we need to find each of us in our own ways. We need to find our ways of reaching out to people and informing them that we've been duped, that everything we know about climate change is wrong, as long as we've been trusting the media and the state establishment, and in fact that we've been led in the wrong direction, and rapidly now as individuals must start to make preparations for a drastically different future. Also heard from K-Bird, who was inspired by the video I posted of vertical towers growing, to try his hand with some own vertical farming. I was thrilled to hear that I inspired that, and I wish you good luck, K-Bird. I spent today 90 minutes, I timed it, because it felt like I was spending too long on the spirulina front, and indeed it was an hour and a half that I spent cleaning out those tanks and filtering them out, which is too much. I think more and more we are going to require systems that run themselves. You know, if we are tired or under physical security threat and needing to, or if we have a sick family member to whom we are needing to attend, or if we fall sick and just need to take care of ourselves for a few days, then these systems really need to be resilient and run themselves. And I'm not saying that the spirulina would fall over in a few days. In fact, the reason that it's having problems is because I was hospitalized for over a week, and that was after leaving these tanks alone while we were in Germany for 2 weeks. So I put this guy through too much is basically what's going on there. But increasingly, it looks to me like the self-sufficient homestead of the future is going to look more and more like an acre and a goat rather than the growing floor of Battlestar Galactica. And I say that, you know, with some, it's too bad. I'm a little disappointed. But hope springs eternal that technology will help us soften our landing. I mean, obviously there are some technologies we can take forward, but rapidly without the grid, they lose relevance. And with that, let's go ahead and dip into some Grand Solar Minimum related news. All right, today we're going to go ahead and use the Grand Solar Minimum Symptoms page on the ICH Farmer Wiki to drive the news, because the whole point of this news segment is to look for trends in current events and headlines in the news that are indicative of what we would expect to be going on in the given the place we are in the solar cycle. So, for instance, the earthquakes and volcanoes are both related to the drastic increase in seismic activity. Let's go ahead and dig in. Obviously, we're seeing that in the last few weeks here. The Ring of Fire exploding right now. 32 volcanoes active, 33 showing activity, lots of earthquakes, plenty of videos if you're interested. I just don't have time to go into it here, but there's some, I mean, they're beautiful and alarming. And this article actually also, rather than focusing on one of the given events, sort of points out that this is pointing to a series of things, that this is indicative of an even larger event, that these are all presaging. So be aware of that. And I would actually agree with that, given that we know we've entered into a time of increased volcanic and seismic activities. Hitting the GSM volcano tag, we see that reflected here as well. Llama, I wonder if that's how that's pronounced, which hasn't erupted. It's down in Chile, is now showing a significant increase in activity. We've also seen several other volcanoes being under alarm and watch come under that in the last week. And as well, we've still been watching the islands that were evacuated completely for the eruptions, Bali. On the GSM hail hashtag, in fact, we already shared earlier in this video the coverage from Brazil, where hail was covering the streets in accumulation. These hailstorms are out of control, folks. GSM food. We saw folks in Vermont grappling with climate change. Totally different conditions this year than they'd had last year. And last year was different than the year before that. So more and more individual farmers are shutting down. Season over early. Winter came in fast. And certainly didn't hold back. The coolest Central European September in years. And corn not having its opportunity to finish. And the flip side of this, on the GSM rain tag, we also see that Norway just this morning was totally underwater. Worst flooding on record in the south there. Equally, although it was, took the form of snow instead of rain, Montana had record-breaking snowstorms, basically a complete blizzard hitting the Rockies in the first few days of October here. They totally just got dumped on. Severe flooding in Australia as well, in Bundaberg, breaking the monthly rainfall record in one day. Heavy snow in Alberta and Saskatchewan. And then Montana and Wyoming again. 16 inches falling in some parts of that snow. And then I showed this video as well, that 9 days after Hurricane Maria, the San Juan streets were still completely flooded and poles knocked over. Not looking great down there. And that brings me to this piece, which is reports that amateur radio operators were literally saving lives from the get-go in Puerto Rico. And I just wanted to combine that with a viewer question, which is having to do with communications and how to ensure that those continue in a grid-down scenario. And similar questions, am I a ham radio operator? Do I do that kind of stuff? Indeed I am. I am KM6BDS. I have a Baofeng handheld, just a little BF-F8HP that I actually really enjoy, and it's pretty useful. You can charge it off solar easily. And I highly recommend that folks at least learn how to use this equipment. You know, if you don't believe in asking the government for permission to, you know, and getting your license, then, you know, let's put that aside. You need to learn how to use this equipment and reach out and talk to other people. In a grid down situation, there's still going to be a period of hours right after that happens where repeaters that are, I guess I should define, repeaters are these towers that are set up. They usually have backup power and they help folks who are mobile like us, you and I, who are just going to be using our handheld rigs. If we're just out on the go or in our car or wherever we are when this happens, we can use our handheld radios to contact, just reach out far enough to talk to the nearest repeater. And what the repeater does is takes that signal and as true to its name, it rebroadcasts it, usually on a slightly different frequency, at a much greater strength. So I can actually talk to people all over Sonoma County, not by virtue of my handheld being a supremely strong broadcaster, because it's not. It's a tiny little handheld unit with a tiny antenna. But because I can't have line of sight to this repeater and know that I've dialed in, you know, when I broadcast, it hits the receiving frequency of the repeater, and that repeater's tower then rebroadcasts it to folks who are driving past on 35 and anyone, you know, a good chunk of Sonoma County. It's pretty fun. And so if the power goes out, I can fire up my battery powered ham radio and reach out and touch that repeater and talk to other people in Sonoma County to find out who else is affected. You know, what's the scope of the situation? Do we know what's going on? And in the amateur radio, just in the radio community at large, there's definitely like a spirit of camaraderie and preparedness and knowing how, you know, knowing what's going on and being ready in an emergency situation. That's why ARRL is proud of the fact that radio operators were saving lives in Puerto Rico, is because it emphasizes that it is a citizen mode of readiness. You know, part of that classic Americana that's been lost. We stand ready. It's the citizens' fire department, right? Where every one of us is the militia. All of these things sort of embody this. Classic Americana spirit of we're all here helping each other as a large community of interdependent but highly independent individuals, sovereign individuals. And I kind of got off track there, but the point is that radio operators are cool people to get to know, and that I highly recommend knowing at least how to use the equipment, if not going ahead getting your license and getting involved with the local club. Because they're cool people that'll put you in touch with other folks. Often those people are into preparedness and other cool things, other cool hobbies as well. And it's just a great way to get to know your community. So net-net, I highly recommend owning and learning how to operate this radio equipment. And I look forward to talking to you when you get your license. And with that, I will go ahead and make the Baofeng BFF8HP handheld ham radio the item of the day. It's something that will come in handy. Reasons I liked it: it's very portable, it's battery powered, and it's programmable. So I can, as I mentioned before, find, and now I can use the internet to find and program in the repeaters that are near me and their offsets, so that I'm ready to go and hit those repeaters when the grid is down and the internet is down and I need to reach out and talk to folks and see what's going on. This will let me do that. And it does all of those things for me quite well, so that's why I'm recommending it. Equip yourself with some ham rig, some radio, if you don't like that one for whatever reason. And if you don't like it, let me know why. I'd love to know what you are using. And let's get in touch. Let's talk more about this. And as well, I'd like to throw out a book of the day. This one recommended by a good friend, The Encyclopedia of Country Living, which I have and highly recommend. It's got a ton of great tips for the self-sufficient homestead. Probably you've seen it over the years. You can definitely find a paperback. I have a link to it below. It's only $5 from Amazon. All right, and with that, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you have been able to stand, like I'm barely able to, the noise of the crickets at all times behind me. Hope that hasn't detracted too much from the fun today at Ice Age Farmer Podcast, but it's been a good episode. I thank you for listening. I thank you also for spreading the word about the Grand Solar Minimum and the effects that we are seeing on our climate and our food production, and the need then, as a result, for us as individuals to rapidly take steps every day towards self-sufficiency and build our communities more resilient. We'll also be sharing knowledge here at the Ice Age Farmer Podcast, because that's what we're about. This has been episode 16, and I thank you for joining. Let's go do great things.